You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. With me is co-host extraordinaire, psychologist Dr. Melody Fox.
And each week, we bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future.
We will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more.
With each of us having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, we've both been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in this field who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us.
And we will bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now today, we'll be talking about the critical partner, someone who constantly blames you and holds you to unrealistic standards. You may feel picked apart, unworthy, or unhappy. We're going to be talking about repairing your relationship by getting to the root of why your partner criticizes you so you both can build a more loving and supportive partnership.
And our guest today is Michelle Skeen. Now, Michelle is the author of Critical Partner, How to End the Cycle of Criticism and Get the Love That You Want. She also has her doctorate in clinical psychology, so she's Dr. Michelle Skeen, and lives and works in San Francisco, California. Michelle, welcome to Answers to the Family.
Hi, Alan and Melody. Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, this is exciting. And, you know, the topic is so prevalent because, as you know, as a psychologist, and I do too, one of the biggest complaints we get in our office is, he always criticizes me, always nags at me, you know, can't do anything right, blah, 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 blah. So...
So absolutely. It is a common issue among couples.
Yeah, it is. So, I mean, is that the reason why you wrote the book, or is, you know, what was your motivation for doing this?
Well, my motivation was to address this issue and also to use the schema framework to understand how this kind of interaction can be destructive over time and how it really impacts the well-being of the partner who is the victim of the criticism. And by understanding our schemas, we can also understand why we may have picked a partner who is critical of us and how we our schemas have brought us together.
Okay, use the word schema. Now, for a lot of people, they have no idea what schema means. Can you explain that?
Yeah, I know. It's a word that I think puts people off, but it's really quite simple. And a schema is a core belief that's rooted in early childhood and adolescent experiences. And through those experiences, we develop beliefs about ourselves and about others. And they stay with us throughout our lives, and they play out in interactions with others.
Yeah, they do, and I see that a lot, and that's one of the biggest things is trying to help people change that core belief.
It's deeply rooted, and you can't get rid of it. It's difficult to change, but I really feel like the first step is understanding what it is, so identifying what it is. And I think that oftentimes we're looking for a solution, and what we need first is to just have a better understanding and maybe a different understanding of what we're comprised of, mm-hmm. what drives us, what drives our interactions and emotional reactions to situations.
Mm-hmm. Well, now, while we're talking about the schema, I noticed in the book that you have a quick schema quiz for the vulnerable partner. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Right. Well, on my website, I have a quick schema quiz for people if they just want to get an idea of what statements would look like pertaining to the five schemas that I've identified as being the most primary schemas among the vulnerable partners. In the book, there is an assessment chapter for the vulnerable partner so that they can identify what their schema is, and it's through a series of rating statements on a Likert scale, so 1 to 6. And the schemas for the vulnerable partner are defectiveness and shame, abandonment, mistrust and abuse, emotional deprivation, and subjugation.
Mm-hmm. Now, the vulnerable partner, do you focus this more book on the vulnerable partner as the one that could help create the change of the critical partner, or because they're more likely to read the book or want help, or how what was your thinking in this?
Right. It's geared more toward the vulnerable partner, but I've had a number of people contact me through my website stating that they're the critical partner and wondering if the book would be helpful to them, and I think it can be helpful to them in a big way. Understanding why they're critical. I've had a couple of callers when I've been on radio shows who were the critical partner saying that they feel horrible, that they can't stop. They're locked in this repetitive cycle that they don't understand and they find difficult to change as well. So I think that, as you've probably seen, Melody, that those people in this situation are suffering. Typically this relationship started off as a loving relationship and both people were hopeful that it would continue for a long time, and they can find themselves at a crossroads, and oftentimes what is necessary is to take a different look at yourself and your partner to get a handle on the possibilities for changing the dynamic.
Okay. Now, Michelle, you said that some of the critical partners have called in. Now, what are some of the issues that they're dealing with? I mean, is there a level of an insecurity or whatever, and is this their way of acting out?
Right. Great question, Alan. Well, in terms of the schema framework, what we find is that the vulnerable partner is typically surrendering to their schema, and that the critical partner is overcompensating for their schema. So in terms of the schemas that I've identified for the critical partner, four of them are the same as the vulnerable partner, and the critical partner doesn't have a subjugation schema. In place of that, they have an entitlement schema. But what you can often see is that two partners, the two people in the partnership may both have the defectiveness and shame schema, but in the case of the critical partner, they're behaving in a way that is critical of others and it makes them appear perfect, when really their core belief is that they're defective, and that if anyone got to know them, they would find them bad or unworthy or lacking in some significant way.
So that's one way to keep people at arm's length, to criticize them and not let them get that close to them if the focus keeps going back to the other person.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah, defense mechanism. Often people
exactly, do. Exactly. So this maladaptive coping behavior is overcompensation. And then in the case of the vulnerable partner with the defectiveness and shame schema, their maladaptive coping behavior is surrender, and they're behaving in a way that reinforces their belief about themselves, that they are bad, that they are lacking in significant ways.
And I'm just thinking, it might be a little off track here, but I know we're talking about the critical partner, but in your practice and what you see, how do couples who are very critical of each other, how have you seen that play out to their children, or how that might affect them?
Right. How does that play out in the family dynamic? Well, it's not a healthy environment for kids to witness this between their parents, and I've seen it go. Oftentimes, the critical partner is only critical of the spouse and not as critical of the children, although I think that it can, what I'm seeing is more of a shift when the children become teenagers. because the teenagers are often critical of their parents. And so I think that that can certainly change the focus of the critical partner, and so that it includes the teenager as well as the spouse.
Mm-hmm. Now, would you say that that's also something that many of these teenagers are going to carry right into their own relationship? If it's been modeled to them that one parent constantly criticizes the other, wouldn't it make sense then that that teenager is either going to find themselves on one end or the other of that?
Absolutely.
So how does your book help relationships heal?
Well, the first piece, which, you know, we've been talking about, is the assessment piece and kind of the self-knowledge piece and a deeper, different understanding of your partner. And then I think it's important for the reader to look at ways in which they may be playing unwittingly a role in this dynamic, in this unhealthy dynamic. So the idea of cognitive distortions that, and I have lots of examples in my book. There are stories to illustrate every schema and every kind of interaction. But when what we hear when someone criticizes us, you know, it triggers a lot of memories and a lot of emotions. So if my partner tells me that he doesn't like the way I'm wearing my hair, if I'm not aware of it, that comment can also trigger for me this, what I used to hear from my mom telling me, that she didn't think I was pretty enough, that she thought my older sister was more attractive. And so it takes on a lot more power and a lot more negative emotion than we're aware of.
Right, and it feeds into that I'm not good enough, and really provides a platform for that person to be more vulnerable.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, what we all see too is it's in the case of the vulnerable partner, it's not like they're always just taking it. I mean, they can retaliate as well with unkind comments. So it's not always one-sided, but it can, you know, usually they'll get pushed to a point where they might find themselves saying something that is hurtful or behaving in a way that is additionally destructive to the relationship.
Yeah, and when you were saying that, I was thinking about, yeah, then they get more in a reactive place. And
exactly.
And I'm just thinking, too, that with the person doing the critical, a lot of times I find that the one that's being critical, they think they're being helpful. They think they're doing constructive criticism.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, that's a great point. Now, where do you draw that line? I mean, for those people that are, you know, the helper bee, where do you draw the line to where, okay, your helping has now become being critical?
Right. Well, I think that the last part of the book highlights alternative coping strategies, and these are healthy coping strategies, and of course the majority of them are about healthy communication. And I think as you go through and read those, you can, and you see the examples of how the interaction looks when it is when it's not healthy and it is driven by negative emotion, then you look at the alternative of what a healthy interaction looks like, and that both people can end up feeling better and feeling heard at the end of that. You know, and sometimes this might mean that you have to call a timeout so that you can de-escalate negative emotions before you have the conversation. And I think that's probably true for all of us as we're dealing with, you know, many different situations in our lives.
When you're talking about alternative coping skills, you mentioned timeout. What are some of the other more functional alternative coping skills that a critical person or a vulnerable person might be able to utilize?
Well, I think that, you know, understanding things like fair fighting, that conflict is inevitable, and that there isn't any way, just because you have conflict in your relationship doesn't mean that your relationship is doomed. Mm-hmm. But it's recognizing that you're going to have disagreements, and then additionally recognizing that both people's needs are equally valid, and that you need to listen to each other, and that both people can be successful and get what they want, and that can involve compromise. I have worksheets in there that lay out ways in which you can arrive at a mutually beneficial compromise by carefully listening and understanding your partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the things that I liked was many of the suggestions that you had are things that not only would work with your partner, but they are things that we really should think about as parents in the way in which we relate to our children. Give us some of the examples of some of the things that really, if we can start doing this with our children at an early age, we're going to set them up so much better to where they're probably going to be able to have a much more balanced relationship themselves.
Absolutely. Well, I have three teenagers. I have two sons in college and a daughter in high school, and I've used a lot of these communication tools. I would say that one of them that I found really helpful is to start off with the timeout, and I mean the timeout for myself, that they may do something that really triggers a negative emotional reaction for me, and rather than turning into the father who filmed himself shooting his daughter's laptop and posted it on YouTube, that I can de-escalate my negative emotional state before and then have a rational conversation with my child about the problem that I have with what they've done or what we're discussing or the way they spoke to me. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's helpful. I don't know, did either of you have a reaction to the dad who the YouTube video?
Well, I never saw it, and this is the first I've heard of it, but it just seems like, well there's somebody that needs a little anger management and and learn how to skills on how to deal with his own frustration, anger, or inability to communicate effectively, that he was disappointed.
Absolutely.
On.
Well, this is not to give this guy a plug, because he's already gotten over 26 million YouTube hits on his video. It's to me, it's quite disturbing, but one of the things that shocked me was that people who were weighing in on their opinion of what he did, other parents, were 10-1 in favor of what he did. And to me, that really highlighted the frustration that parents feel when the dynamic shifts in the relationship with their children, when their children become teenagers. It does change. And you don't just have a passive child who thinks that the sun rises and sets over you. And that as parents, we need to be taught alternative coping behaviors, healthy coping behaviors for communicating with our teenager. And that these parents are obviously hugely frustrated mm-hmm. with the dynamic that they have between themselves and their adolescent child.
And a lot of that, too, is going back to their own critical self and
mm-hmm.
and criticizing their children as well as their partner of, you know, they shouldn't be doing this, and why don't you do it this way? And, you know, you're just like your father. You can't do anything right.
mm-hmm. Exactly.
Or mother or what have you.
Right. And this father was reacting to his daughter's criticism on her Facebook page, which he wasn't supposed to see, but she had posted for her friends mm-hmm. that, you know, she was unhappy with him and just kind of a nasty little, you know, letter about the chores that she had to do around the house and all of that, but kind of, you know, typical teenage behavior and probably things that we all said about our parents before the age of Facebook, and that if they had heard it, maybe they would have been as angry. But his response was to, you know, to go all in and, well, you're going to do that, I'm going to do this. And he upped the ante, and I don't think he set a good example for her. And I think that most teenagers would say that, you know, if their parent did that, that they would lose credibility.
Oh, absolutely. But you had mentioned, like, before the age of Facebook, we all said things like that. But that's something you used to write in your diary or complain to your friends
about. Exactly.
But I think this is a good lesson to realize that anything you post online, anybody could see at any time.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, Michelle, one of the things that it got me thinking about is, at least for myself, speaking for myself, when I think that I'm most critical, when I really look at it afterwards, I was probably most upset with myself.
Absolutely.
And I think that goes along with what you're saying about the time out, that if you take the time out, you may realize that you're probably more disappointed with yourself, and I think it's harder than to see that while you're in that moment. So, is that kind of your plan in regards to the sort of put yourself in time out while you figure out where this is coming from?
Absolutely. And also, I think that, you know, that really highlights the emotional state of the critical partner, that they're not feeling good about themselves. You know, this is a defense, right? Mm-hmm. They feel like they're unlovable or, you know, or defective or, you know, that they'll never, or in the case of the emotional deprivation schema, that they'll never get the love they want. And so they're trying to manage that emotional state by lashing out at theoretically the person in their life who loves them the most.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about, you know, the critical partner and saying things, and I try not to be that way, but sometimes I find myself saying things and I sound just like my mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
She definitely had a critical side, but it was all because she loved us and only wanted the best. But it's like, that's when I really try to be cognizant of, okay, where is this coming from? This has nothing to do with that other person. This is about me and that automatic response and that early schema that was kind of put into my brain on how you talk to people or how you act or react to them. And I mean, in thinking about that, I'm going, can critical partners really change this kind of behavior? I mean, I think the first step is awareness, and you could modify or change, but it's so
right.
Deep and so core from such
it
a
is.
Early stage.
And I think that, and I'm quick to tell everyone, this isn't a quick fix. This takes hard work, and this is, as you can see, kind of a workbook. It's not like you're going to read it and all of your problems are going to be solved. You're going to have to put some effort in and really track your progress and the behaviors that you're trying to incorporate into your life and your interaction with your partner or other people in your life. Mm-hmm. So it's every day, you know. It's like, you know, losing. Why do all these diet books keep selling? Why does everyone keep losing the same, you know, 30 pounds and gaining it back? It's because you have to maintain. You just do, and you have to stay on top of it. That means you have to be checking in every day. It's one of the reasons that on my website, I've offered this password protected journal feature so that people can create their own private journal and keep track of their behavior. It's kind of like, you know, I get on the scale every day and weigh myself, and I know based upon where my weight is what that day is going to look like in terms of what I eat or, you know, the exercise that I do. So it's the same kind of idea for dealing with your behavior.
Yeah, and you know, thinking about that change, I like to think I'm pretty aware, but I still get caught mm-hmm. up in that old pattern.
Oh, absolutely.
But the key is to
I mean, this
yourself.
Isn't about getting to this point of perfection. I think that's elusive.
Oh, well, who's
but
perfect?
It is about having fewer of these negative emotionally charged interactions.
Right. Exactly. Well, Michelle, we need to take a quick break. We today at Answers for the Family are blessed to be talking to Dr. Michelle Skeen, the author of Critical Partner, The Critical Partner, How to End the Cycle of Criticism and Getting the Love You Want. We'll take a quick break and then we'll be right back for more. Stand by.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back with more Answers for the Family. I'm Dr. Melody Fox with co-host Alan Cardoza. We're both here today having a lovely conversation with Dr. Michelle Skeen, the author of The Critical Partner, How to End the Cycle of Criticism and Get the Love You Want. And Michelle, before we went to that quick break, you were talking about on your website how you have a journal that people could log into. Does that correlate with the book that you wrote?
It does. I do encourage people to keep a journal to chart their progress so that I know it's hard for some people and it seems like a lot of work to keep a journal. I give an alternative journal style, you know, using bullet points. But I think it's a nice way, especially if we're feeling like we're not having a good day, we've had an unsuccessful interaction, to look back and see that progress is still being made. And so that does correlate with my book. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I really like it because it takes the fact of journaling, which I think is a great way to work things out for yourself, but you've also made it very confidential so that it's password protected. People can feel comfortable doing that. And again, if anybody wants to go to the website and check that out, it is www.thecriticalpartner.com. Or you can also go to www.michelleskeen.com. That's S-K-E-E-N. For those of you that are driving and can't write this down, you know you can mm-hmm. always go to our Answers for the Family website, and there will be information on Michelle. Mm-hmm. And again, that one is answers, the numeral four, thefamily.com.
Blog.com.
That's right. We got to get the blog part in there. www.answers, the numeral four, thefamilyblog.com.
That's right. Yeah. Well, thanks, Alan. Well, Michelle, we have some listener questions for you, so if you don't mind taking a listen and giving your...
Oh, I love listener questions.
Okay. Well, the first one is, I hardly know a single couple that one or both have developed a very critical opinion of their mate and or their children, and as soon as you are in the least bit familiar with the complaints, they spill over into the conversation. Let's see, it says, my marriage was the same as it was not even a year in that my husband began to use criticism to control me and my children from my previous marriage. It became so horribly abusive as the years wore on and, as expected, was the number one cause of the divorce. Do you really feel that ego-driven, very dominant men can turn it around, as I certainly cannot picture anything working for my ex?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, I mean, in some situations, you may read this book and get through it and determine that you can't work things out with your critical partner. I think that it's true that some people are not going to change. I also think it's true that even if you're going through the book and adopting some of the alternative coping strategies and you're doing it without your partner knowing, that our behavior can certainly unknowingly change other people's behavior. I think we all have that experience where if we address someone in a pleasant or more positive way, that we'll get a different kind of response than if we're combative and negative.
Right.
So I think it's possible to make the changes. Let's say that at the end of this, she says, "Wow, I can't be with this guy. He's not changing." Then the key is that you have this information going forward, and hopefully in your next relationship, you would be able to identify if, again, you're being drawn to a critical partner. Because as I explain in my book, this whole idea of schema magnets and schema chemistry, that our schemas are going to be highly activated by a type of person who feels very familiar to us. You know, we're always comfortable with people who we feel like we know, and it's because we know what to expect and we know how to behave when we're interacting with someone like this. This doesn't mean it's good. You know, there's going to be increased emotional arousal with this kind of person, but we need to be aware of why we are getting triggered by a particular person, why we have that. Is it cognitive consistency, where you're drawn to someone who reminds you of your family, or is it, you know, the emotional arousal? When your scheme is triggered, there's high emotional escalation. So I think that, again, knowledge is power, and this kind of self-knowledge to understand, first of all, why you're in a relationship with someone like this, and then how you can make the changes going forward.
Right, especially if you see a repetitive pattern in relationship after relationship.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's why in some of the, I have exercises that can identify cognitive consistency, you know, where you would write down characteristics that your mother has and her behaviors, characteristics of your father and his behaviors, characteristics of siblings and peers and their behaviors, and your partner's characteristics and behaviors, so that you can really identify if there's some kind of correlation and ultimately a pattern in the way that you've selected the people that you've spent time with, either in long-term relationships or even in dating, and certainly in marriage.
Right. And sometimes, though, it seems like you can't get away from the critical partner. It's no matter what you try to do, you know, whether you try to ignore it, not take it personally, not get reactive, they're just going to be who they are. So you come to a point where, is this going to be okay for you, or is it not okay for you?
Right. In terms of the relationship, like that you're living with that person,
right,
or in the rest of our lives, mm-hmm. Are we talking about specifically the critical partner?
Specifically the critical partner, if they're not going to change, because a lot of times,
right,
I find that couples come in and they don't have children yet, and I already hear, you know, the wife complaining how critical the husband is. And it's like, well, if he doesn't change, is this somebody you want as a father of your children? Is this the behavior you want modeled? You know, if you're looking long term here, or is this something that you could live with and be okay?
Absolutely. What are you finding in your practice with how people respond to what is a really great question that you pose to them?
Well, it's probably a lot of different things, First and foremost, it's like I work on helping them change their, I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist, but I use a lot of cognitive behavioral restructuring on how they're going to respond and why they're responding to their partner's criticism that way, so they get a better understanding. Is this from their early schema, and that's what they're used to, and that's what they expect, even though consciously they don't want that? Do they want to make a change in that?
Right. So you're looking at the idea of cognitive distortions, too.
Right. Exactly.
Why they're having such a powerful response to something that may be not a big criticism.
That might be taking it way too personal. And then right. And then it's just really breaking it down so they could figure out, is this truly about the partner, the critical partner being critical of mm-hmm. them, or is they taking it personally, or is that person really that critical and that mean?
All right.
Mm-hmm. I think it can be all of that.
And sure. You know what? We've got a call coming in. Let me see if I can catch it. Hi, you're on with Michelle Skeen and Answers for the Family.
Hi, I was listening to the comment a little bit earlier about children or teens with their parents, and they had a comment.
Sure.
Single parents now are so prevalent. I mean, it's an epidemic that parents are alone raising teens by themselves, children by themselves. And one of the things I've noticed with a lot of my friends, and that's been really very, very concerning, is how the child gets into this dominant position and making the mother or the father feel like they're not a good parent. And mm-hmm. it is as bullying, it is as dramatic, because it's, you know, less maturity even among the teens. And I think there's a whole topic there, or project, or book, around how the single parent and the child can avoid these the very, very manipulative situations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really important point. And I just wrote a story about this mom who grew up in an environment that left her with a defectiveness and shame schema, but she went on to be happily married, and she felt really great about her relationship with her husband and with her child and with her daughter, until her daughter became a teenager. Mm-hmm. And her daughter became very critical of her. And when the dad was around, he would defend his wife and say, "You don't talk to your mom like that." But when she was alone with her teenage daughter, she found herself allowing her daughter to criticize her, and she wasn't defending herself. And in fact, in this case, her defectiveness and shame schema was getting triggered, and she was surrendering to the schema by allowing her daughter to go unchecked with her criticisms of her. And I think that in the case of what the caller was just talking about in her observation, mm-hmm. We're seeing a lot of that, particularly, with single moms who maybe have a more passive temperament and are afraid to challenge their children, and on some level, believe what their teenagers are saying to them. Mm-hmm. And I think that it is contributing to a lot of teenagers' beliefs that, they're entitled to certain things and certain treatment.
Right. And it's like the vulnerable partner. It's the vulnerable parent. they're really mm-hmm. – and that's where I think the parents need to be in power, that they can set boundaries and they can say, "That's not acceptable to talk to me that way," or, do the things that you were saying, like the father would do. "You don't talk to your mother that way. You don't talk to me that way. That's not okay."
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the reasons that this YouTube video got so much support by parents, is that these parents aren't dealing with their teenagers in healthy ways and setting boundaries for them. So they're at this point where they feel like, wow, it would take a gun and shooting my child's laptop to get their attention.
Which is ridiculous, I think. It's just an overkill,
yeah.
An overreaction, and very violent, too.
It's very violent.
And I just kept thinking, it's like, okay, yeah, I really want to shoot my kid because I'm so pissed off right now, but I can't do that, so I'm going to shoot the computer.
Exactly.
Exactly.
And I think, well, you know, anyone who's been, who is or has been the parent of a teenager, I mean, we all get pushed to the wall and have, we may have fantasies like, I wish I could take their computer away or whatever, but
well,
the
can.
Reality is we don't follow through on that stuff. We find other ways to deal with it, hopefully,
right.
Healthier ways.
Right, exactly.
And ways that don't discredit us.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Right. And then right now, while we're talking about the relationship with the children, we have a comment that's coming across. This one reads, as a child psychologist, parents bring their kids to, quote, fix them. And the psychologist says, I will not treat children without the complete involvement of their parents, and many times the siblings as well, because of this very issue. I am mm-hmm. currently heading over to the bookstore to buy your book, because even with my year's experience, I too can use more expertise in this area. The challenges of dealing with today's families is more difficult than ever, and this subject certainly hits right at the heart of it.
Now, that's really a great email. I think that, you know, what we're seeing a lot is that the parents aren't dealing with their issues. And if we're looking at a dynamic like we're addressing in the critical partner, mm-hmm. then and the parents aren't dealing with their own relationship, what you often find when kids get to a certain age is that there's this idea of the identified patient in the
right.
family melody. I'm
mm-hmm.
sure you're way
Very
too
aware.
Familiar with that, where it's like, let's say this child is the problem.
Right.
You know, this is why we're having all of these problems, because the kid is the problem. And in fact, when all of the, if you go through the full assessment, you may find that the child's not the problem at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, and oftentimes I find that, and it's almost normalizing for the kid to tell them they're not the crazy ones. They're the
exactly.
most sane. They're the ones that are acting out all the dysfunction of the family. They're the ones speaking the truth. They're the ones speaking up and calling a spade a spade. And the parents
mm-hmm.
and the other people don't want to see it.
And that's so powerful, isn't it? And so great to be on the giving end of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I see that, and I'm sure you do too, the identified client or identified patient, as they
mm-hmm.
say. And it's not always the kid. And sometimes it may be the vulnerable partner. The critical partner say, oh, you need therapy. There's this, that, and whatever wrong with you. And so they drag
right.
them in, or they send them in. And it's really, there's nothing wrong with the vulnerable parent. They just haven't learned to, or the partner, they haven't learned to set their boundaries and say, you know what, this isn't okay.
Right. And especially if they have children, it's important to do that, because we all need to model good behavior for our children. And how do we raise healthy, happy, confident children? Well, hopefully by being healthy and happy and confident ourselves, right?
Absolutely. And remembering that at all times we are a role model. As we were talking about this, I was thinking of a family that we worked with. And the father was gone quite a bit. They wanted us to place somebody in the home because they said the child was getting violent with the mother, and he was 12 years old. Well, we did this, and what we learned is the child was incredibly critical of the mother and was very violent with the mother, but we were never around when the father was there. And at one point, after working with them for a matter of weeks, we had a situation at a dinner table to where the father had come home early, and so he was at the table. My agent reported back to me and said, I think I've found the problem. The father was incredibly critical of the mother, and all the 12-year-old was doing was mimicking what his father was doing.
Mm-hmm.
He was replacing the father when he was gone.
Exactly.
Right. Which is
wow.
really, I'm sure you see this a lot too, when there's one male in the family, even if they're 4 years old, 12 years old, 20 years old, they kind of try to step up and be the man of the family.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they're going to model what they see.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I want to get back a little bit about how in the book you discuss the different coping behaviors, and we touched on that in the triggering events. Can you explain more on mm-hmm. how that's addressed in your book?
The maladaptive coping behaviors or some healthy alternative coping behaviors?
Well, I think we have time for a little bit of both.
Okay. Well, one of the things all this conversation has reminded me of is the idea of the I message, and as a healthy way of addressing your partner or, you know, your child and getting your message across. I think that, you know, we all shut down when we feel like the person who's talking to us is coming at us attacking in an attacking or blaming way. Mm-hmm. So that would sound more like you do this and you do that. And
you make me feel.
The healthier way. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Melody.
Oh, I was going to say, or you make me feel, or you made me do this.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's blaming. And I think you lose your message when it's presented in that kind of package. So one really easy way to help with that situation, although I say easy, but we all have gotten so locked into our own language that sometimes it can be really difficult to change, but to state any, make any statement with the I so that you're talking about yourself. And I think that oftentimes this can be really difficult for us because if you practice some of these statements, you definitely feel more vulnerable. You know, like you're exposing your emotional state more than you do when you're using the you message. Mm-hmm. And but I think that, you know, what we know from these experiences is that more often than not, when we make ourselves more vulnerable and we're not in such an attacking mode, that we can get a better response from the person who we're talking to.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michelle, we've got about 2 minutes. Can you give us just a couple of examples of where you can replace a you message with an I message that is going to hopefully allow better communication?
Well, I think that oftentimes for the vulnerable partner, they are not even communicating how hurt they are by what the critical partner is doing to them. I think that oftentimes they let it build and then they finally come back with a really unhealthy kind of blaming reaction of their partner or some kind of, you know, they explode. And they've just taken, which is understandable, you know, they've been taking it and taking it and taking it. And I think what I've found is it can be really powerful. It has to be done at the right time, so it can't be, this message can't be communicated when there's, you know, a highly negative emotional state. But to say, I really feel unloved by you when you make those comments to me. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like you love me. I don't feel like you care about me. I don't feel like I do anything right.
Right.
And because that is what the vulnerable partner is feeling. And I think so often not saying, or certainly not saying to the critical partner, they're just, you know, they're too wounded and too fragile to kind of expose that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I was thinking too about, although I lost my thought here, Alan's waving to me. my thought is, where was my thought? It went somewhere. I was going to say something about that, but I did want to also say that I really liked your book. I think it's a really good book to have on a therapist bookshelf, which I enjoy having too when clients come in and ask, what can I do? I want things to work on. So that it's nice. It's very workable, and whether you're in a therapy office or you're on your own, to go get your book. And where can they get your book?
The book is available on Amazon.com. Mm-hmm. And you can also go to my website, and there's a link to different bookstores that carry it, and online. It's also available in an ebook. Mm-hmm. And I really appreciate you two having me on. That was the quickest hour I've spent.
Well,
I really appreciate it.
Well, we appreciated you as our guest today. Our guest is Dr. Michelle Skeen, the author of The Critical Partner, How to End the Cycle of Criticism and Get the Love You Want. And I highly recommend you go out and get that book. I don't recommend too many books, but I really enjoyed this book. That was great. Thank you so much for being with us today on Answers for the Family. If you want more information, just go to our website, www.answers4thefamilyblog.com, and we'll be back next week.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.